There are moments when you are stuck. No way forward, no way back, only pressure on every side. And in those moments, fear starts to rewrite your story. What if we can't make it? What if we were better off before? But God does not call you to retreat. He calls you to move forward. Because sometimes the waters don't disappear, they divide. And when they do, God is already there.
Well, good morning, Sunnyside. It's great to be with you again to bring another message in our series that we are working through called On the Waters. If you didn't have a chance to catch last week's message, I would encourage you to go back and do so. It's available on our website, our YouTube page, and on Right Now Media as well. Naya, I can't see the slide here. Would you be able to fix that for me? Thanks. But this is a series that we are journeying through where we're looking at five different stories in the Bible where water played a key role. And what we're doing is we're discovering this tagline here that whatever the waters look like, God is already there. Because I think every one of us knows what it feels like to face waters that we may not have expected in our life. How many of you have been there before? Facing a situation that you didn't expect. Sometimes those waters rise around us like they did for Noah, or sometimes they stand in front of us, blocking the way forward. Sometimes they feel chaotic or uncertain, overwhelming, or maybe even impossible. But the good news is that, as I said, we're discovering in this series, no matter what kind of water we face, God is never absent from that. God is never absent. He's already working. He's already making a way before we can even see it ourselves. So when we looked at the story of Noah last week, and we looked at how the flood waters rose, and we understood that God called Noah into a totally different level of obedience. That while the world was full of corruption, Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord, and so he told him to build an ark because there was a storm that was coming. And we learned that obedience, even for us today, looks exactly like Noah. It means to build before the rain ever starts. And that's how our faith is built. It's built on not knowing the outcome or when the storm will come, but trusting that God has called us to build before it, just as he did for Noah, and he will not forget us in the storms of life. But today I want to ask us, what would happen when you're no longer building through faith in the background, but instead you suddenly find yourself standing in a moment where the pressure seems immediate? What happens when the problem is no longer somewhere out in the future, but it's standing right in front of you now? What happens when there doesn't seem to be a clear way forward, but there's also no safe way to retreat backward either? Because that's exactly where Israel finds themselves in our text today. Have you ever found yourself in a situation in life where you have felt trapped like Moses and the Israelites would have at the Red Sea? Ever found yourself in a situation like that? Every option around you seemed to close in at once, the pressure closing in from all directions, and that is the pressure sitting over this entire moment in the history of Israel. See, they had been slaves in Egypt for generations, and for the first time in their lives, freedom actually felt possible. They ate the Passover meal with their sandals on, waiting for the word, and Noah gave it, and they gathered their families and their children, and together they left Egypt behind. But freedom quickly gave way to fear. I want you to imagine that moment. The Israelites are camped between the Red Sea with Egypt far in the distance. And suddenly someone stands up and points back towards Egypt because there's a bit of unsettling in the dust. A little bit of sand is rising. At first they think it's nothing, but then the sound grows louder. Horses, chariots, soldiers, Pharaoh's army is running after them. And the panic starts to set in throughout the camp. The parents are grabbing their children. People are shouting over one another, trying to figure out what to do. Some of them are probably frozen in fear. Others are even angry at Moses for even bringing them to this place because they were better off in Egypt. Why would they come out here to die? And as they turn around to run, they realize, oh, right, the Red Sea is blocking our way. There is nowhere to go. And that very freedom they had celebrated only moments ago now suddenly feels fragile. But here's the part of the story that's challenging and deeply important. God led them there. This wasn't an accident. This wasn't because Moses was a terrible navigator. This was because God intentionally led his people to a place where they would have to trust him completely. And if we're honest, how many of you could say that that's difficult at sometimes to trust God completely with the direction we're going in our lives? Because many of us assume that if God is leading us, then the path ahead is going to be clear. It's going to be all sunshine and rainbows. But that's not right. Because sometimes God leads us into situations where our own strength and wisdom and control are no longer enough because he wants to show us that he is enough. And sometimes God brings us to the edge of the water so we can discover the only thing that can do is he can make a way through it. He's the only one that can. See, again, how many of us have felt that God has led you into a similar kind of place where you're up against the Red Sea? There's no way forward. Maybe it was uncertainty about a job. One door closed before another opened. Maybe it was tension and stress within your family. Maybe it was just simply a moment of feeling stuck in the season that you were in. Maybe it was a time of being confused or having doubts about your faith. But see, in those moments, it's easy for fear to trickle in, for those doubts and fears to rise. But here's the truth, and I want us to see it again this morning, that whatever the waters look like, God is already there. He was there before Israel arrived at the Red Sea. He already knew what Pharaoh and his armies were going to do, and he was making a way for his people long before they ever saw one themselves. And so today we're going to unpack this story a bit more in Exodus 14. And like last week, Exodus 14, it's quite a big chapter to read. We're not going to read through all of it because it is quite large, and I don't want us to be here all day. I would love to spend all day with you, don't get me wrong, but I know we all have other things that we need to do. But what I'm going to do is give you a bit of a high overview, and I'd encourage you to go and read the entire passage for yourself, and then we'll highlight a couple key verses as we work through this. But Exodus 14 unfolds with this incredible tension. Pharaoh has just set the Israelites free from being slaves after generations, and suddenly he changes his mind, and he gathers his army and sends them out after Israel. And the people of Israel are camped there between the Red Sea and Egypt, and they see the soldiers quickly approaching. They look ahead, they see the Red Sea blocking their way, and fear spreads through their camp. The questions rise, and panic takes over. And it's right here in the middle of fear, confusion, and impossibility that God prepares to reveal his power to his people. But before the waters ever part, before the miracle ever comes, before deliverance arrives, we get this very honest picture of what fear can do to the human heart. Because when people feel trapped, afraid, and even uncertain, it becomes very easy to forget what God already did for them. And if we're honest, many of us know exactly what that feels like too. So let's look together at three truths that we can take from this encounter with water that speaks directly to our moments of fear, uncertainty, and impossibility. Like I said, we're going to be in Exodus 14. If you've got your Bibles with you, we're going to go to Exodus 14, verse 10. And if you have something to take notes and you want to jot down these headings as we go, these three truths, here's the first one. Fear distorts your memory. Exodus 14, verse 10. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than die in the desert." These few verses in Exodus 14 show us exactly what went through the camp of the Israelites when they saw Pharaoh and his armies approaching. They became terrified. Look again at verse 11. It said, they said to Moses, was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? It's crazy how quickly fear can overpower and change the outlook completely. The craziest part is that if you go back in the story, just a few days earlier, the Israelites had a front row seat to God performing miracle after miracle after miracle through the 10 plagues that he sent on Egypt. They witnessed God's power over the Egyptians and his protection over them as his people. And they even experienced deliverance firsthand. And yet now they stand with the water blocking their way, and it begins to overwhelm the memory, and they begin to question everything. See, fear has a powerful way of distorting our memory. Because when fear takes over, we stop seeing clearly. We stop remembering accurately. And suddenly the very places that God has delivered us from in the past begin to look appealing again. And that's exactly what happens here in Exodus 14. The people are standing at the Red Sea, Pharaoh's army quickly approaching behind them. Panic begins to rise. And they say to Moses in verse 12, it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. Think of how shocking that statement really is. See, Egypt was a place of slavery, a place of suffering, the place where they actually cried out to God for deliverance generation after generation, not just day after day, but multiple generations crying out to God for deliverance. See, Egypt was a place where they faced oppression on a daily basis. They were beaten down and they were treated less than human. And yet now in this moment of fear, they begin to say, hey, you know what? It was probably better off back there. It was better to be treated less than human than it is for us to be stuck right here in this moment. See, that's what fear does to us. Fear rewrites the past. Fear has a way of making bondage look safer than freedom because freedom requires trust. See, at least in Egypt, they knew what to expect. Absolutely, it was going to be painful, but it was familiar. And sometimes the familiar pain begins to feel safer than unfamiliar freedom. Now, before we judge the Israelites too quickly, we need to recognize that this is something that we do all the same. Sometimes God brings us into a new season. But when things become uncertain and uncomfortable, we start to look backward instead of forward. People walk away from environments that were draining or unhealthy, but later they begin to miss the comfort of what they already knew. Or people step into a new opportunity or a new calling from God, but when the pressure begins to rise, they begin glorifying the past and wondering if they should go back. Or sometimes people begin growing spiritually and they confront their old habits, the old ways of living. But when that process begins to feel difficult, they begin missing the comfort of what God was trying to free them from all along. See, sometimes we would rather return to what is familiar than to trust God into something unknown. Because fear has a way of editing our memories. See, it minimizes the pain of the past while maximizing the pressure of the present. And suddenly, we forget how faithful God has already been. That's exactly what's happening to Israel right here. Days earlier, they had witnessed these miracles. They saw God send the plagues. They saw him protect them. They saw him break the power of Egypt and lead them out. But now, because fear is louder than faith in this moment, all they can see is the obstacle in front of them. And isn't that true for us sometimes? When the anxiety rises, we forget the prayers that God has already answered. Or when the pressure builds, we forget the seasons God has already carried us through. Or when uncertainty comes, we forget the faithfulness of God in our past. We remember the discomfort of the present more than the miracles of our past. And this is why fear is so dangerous spiritually. Because fear does not just affect how we see the future. Fear affects how we interpret the past. It affects what God has already done. It causes us to doubt what God's already proven. It causes us to believe the lie that somehow slavery was safer than trusting God and freedom. But I want us to hear this clearly today. Just because the path forward is uncertain does not mean the place behind you was better. Maybe you ask yourself today, what has fear made you forget? Has fear caused you to forget prayers that God has already answered, the way God has already carried you through? Has fear caused you to believe the past was safer simply because the now feels uncertain? God didn't bring Israel out of Egypt to abandon them at the sea. And the same God who was faithful in their deliverance would also be faithful in your impossibility. But here's the point in our story where it becomes even more challenging. Because God's response to their fear wasn't through the immediate removal of the obstacle. It is to call them to move forward before they can even see the way through. Our second truth is God moves before he shows us the way. Go back to Exodus 14, verse 13. Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today, you will never see them again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only be still." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out the hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground." Here we see Moses standing before the people of God, trying to bring a calm to the storm and the panic they're facing. And he says to them, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm, and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today." How many of you think in that moment the Israelites actually believed what Moses was saying? That God was going to bring deliverance? Remember, they've already let fear distort their memory. But if that's not enough, then God says to Moses to tell the people in verse 15 to move on. If they didn't believe the first one, you think they're going to follow the second one? I think they're probably thinking more like, move on. To where? The sea's still there. Pharaoh's still coming behind us. Nothing about our situation has changed. They couldn't see a clear path ahead, no visible solution. And yet, like God called to Noah to build before the rain, he called his people in this moment to move forward before the waters ever parted. As we discussed last week, this is the tension of our faith. We want the answers before the obedience. We want the full map before we take the first step. We want certainty before surrender. We want God to explain everything to us before we ever place our trust in him. We want those guarantees before the obedience. We want to know how it's going to end before we say that we're signing on. But like with Noah and so many others in scriptures, God asks people to move so that they can fully see what he is about to do. And this becomes a central truth in this story, to step before the seas part. Imagine how difficult that must have felt. To step before the seas part. Because every instinct of their body is saying, stop, don't do it. There's no path. The water's still there. It's not just going to suddenly move out of your way. You're going to drown. It's probably better in this moment to just lay down and surrender to Pharaoh. Because often, fear tempts us to quit. Yet our faith requires movement before proof. It's a lot like stepping into your calling on your life before you feel ready. For myself, when I felt God's call into ministry, I think I've shared with you before, I thought I was called back in high school to be a youth pastor until a mentor of mine told me, "You'll never make it, give up on that. That's not God talking, that's just bad sushi, I don't know." And so I believed him, and I never pursued ministry. And I went into baking and pastry arts and ended up getting out of that industry and working retail. And it was while I was working retail that a coworker came to me and told me that I was wasting my time and my talents in managing a retail store and that I needed to actually go through the door that God keeps opening and stop slamming it in his face. I was a pastry chef. That's the only education I had. I didn't have any ministry training. I went and had a meeting with one of our former pastors, Pastor Darren, and he said, it's about time. We've been waiting. I talked to Pastor Carrie, another one of our former pastors, and she said the same thing. And I'm like, I don't get it. I'm not ready for this. I don't have any education for that. You guys went to Bible college. I didn't do any of that. I can decorate cakes. How does that work for preaching on a Sunday morning? They started going through the process. And they said, all it takes is for you to just step out in faith. If God's calling you to this, God is going to provide the education and all the support that you're going to need. It was difficult. It took a few months of praying with Sam and our family about whether or not this was the right thing to do. But I did. I took that first step before I could see the way forward. I didn't know how long it was going to take. I didn't realize that, you know, I started here at the church in 2019 working 5 hours a week. I didn't know when that was going to turn into full time. I didn't realize that when it turned into full time, I'm still going to be in my coursework. It's still going to be a long process. I still have 11 courses to go. We're chipping away at it. But God has been faithful and shown the support because I took that first step without seeing the whole way forward. But the difference is most of us want to see that way forward first. But God often says, take the first step. See, that's the beauty of God's grace. It moves towards us before we fully understand it. God acts first. He initiates. He prepares the way, and then we get to respond in trust. Because faith is not earning God's movement. It's responding to the God who's already moving. And maybe that's where you find yourself today, standing at the edge of something uncertain, knowing that God is calling you to move forward, but still wishing that he would show you the whole plan first. Maybe for you, it's taking a step of obedience. Maybe trusting God in a season where you don't have the answers. Maybe it's simply forgiving someone, stepping into your calling. Or maybe it's fully surrendering something that you've been holding on to for years. And if we're honest, many of us keep waiting for God to part the sea before we will move. But often God says, take the first step. Because faith is not about having full visibility. Faith is about trusting the one who does. So imagine standing at the edge of the sea like Israel did. In front of you is something that feels impossible to move through. You cannot see beyond it. You cannot control it. You cannot make a way through it. It's a lot like this tank of water here. I know that this little Fisher-Price toy is supposed to be Noah. Today he's Moses. He has a staff, but Moses didn't have a dove. Moses is standing on this side. What God is promising is on this side. As he stands here, there is no way for him to get through. This is all Israel could see. Until they saw a bit of motion on the water. This is what faith often feels like. God says move forward, but the obstacle is still standing in the way. See, the sea had not parted yet. The path was not visible yet, but God was already making a way for them to get to this side. That's our third truth, that God turns our obstacles into pathways. Let's unpack that further. Look at verses 21 and 22. Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on the right and on their left. The moment they've been waiting for has finally arrived, a visible next step forward. Think of the tension, though. It says it took God all night to do it. The panic is still happening. The army is still coming. But the visible next step arrives. Moses stretches out his hand over the sea. The Lord drives back the waters. Realize, though, it's not human effort that creates the way. It was divine intervention. Could you imagine that for a moment, though? The wind begins to move across the water. Not chaos this time, but purpose. Not destruction, but direction. Not randomness, but the steady, sovereign hand of God at work. And slowly, what looked impossible begins to shift. At first, it would have been subtle. Maybe just a stirring on the surface, but the waters begin to pull back. Not violently, but deliberately. As if creation itself was responding to the voice of its creator. And then the impossible happens. There's walls of water on both sides. If you've been sitting here all day being, what is going on the stage today? This is the water on each side. A pathway appears where there was none. Dry ground where only moments ago there was deep sea. And here is something important we see in this moment. God does not remove the sea. He transforms it into a pathway. See, the place that once represented limitation becomes the very place of deliverance. What once stood as a barrier now stands as a road forward. And now Israel is walking through what only moments ago was their greatest fear. Not around it, not over it, not away from it, but through it, step by step. With walls of water towering over them on both sides, holding back what should have crushed them, they walk ahead on dry ground. And I would like to think in that moment, there was a contrast to the panic and the shouting and the fear just moments ago. I know they've witnessed God's miracles before, but I think there was this utter silence. I think the Prince of Egypt movie describes it very well. You got people walking through, running their hands through the water. How can this be real? You can see the fish swimming up. They're not jumping out, but you can see them face to face. And there's just this silence and this awe. There's no panic. It's just the sound of the water, the footsteps, and that's obedience and trust. Because oftentimes in our lives, faith is not loud. It's simply the next step forward when everything is telling you to stop. This is who God is. He's not only the one who leads his people to the edge of the impossible things, he's the one who makes the way through them. He doesn't just bring us to moments where we realize we're out of options. He then reveals himself as the God who still has options when we have none. And the very thing that only moments ago looked like the end for the Israelites becomes a place where God delivers them once again. Look at verse 23. The Egyptians pursued them, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He jammed the wheels of the chariots so that they had difficulty driving, and the Egyptians said, "Let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch your hand over the sea so the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen." Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea went back to its place. The Egyptians were fleeing toward it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. In this moment, the waters hold two judgments at once. For Egypt, the waters become judgment. For Israel, the waters become salvation. The same water that stopped one group becomes the pathway for another. What destroys one system becomes the way of deliverance for God's people. And maybe that's the quiet truth in this whole story that we often overlook. That God is not changing Israel's situation. He's revealing his authority over it. He's showing that even what looks like opposition is still under his control. Even what looks like an ending can become a beginning in his hands. So the question then becomes, Where in our lives is God doing the same thing today? Where are we standing in front of something that feels like an obstacle, but God is already preparing it to become a pathway? Because if he can do this with a sea, then there's really no place that is beyond his ability to redeem, reshape, and make a way through. If we take a step back now and look at Exodus 14 as a whole, it paints this beautiful picture and the powerful picture of who God really is. He's a deliverer, he is a guide, and he is a way maker. And over again, we see this truth woven through our story today that whatever the waters look like, God is already there. Not reacting, not surprised, not distant, already there in the middle of it. See, before Israel ever reached the Red Sea, God already knew how he was going to bring them through it. He wasn't figuring it out in the moment. He already was preparing ahead of time before they even arrived. And before you ever arrived in your situation, your season you find yourself in, where it feels like there is no way forward, God was already there too. In your uncertainty, he was there. In your fear, he was already there. In your waiting, he was already there. In your questions, he was already there, and he is still right there today. Maybe that's what we need to hear most clearly this morning, that that same God is speaking into our lives today. I'm going to invite the worship team to come back up. Because the same God speaking to us today, reminding us that fear distorts your memory. It makes us forget what God has already done. That God moves you before he shows you the way. He calls us to trust him one step at a time. And God turns our obstacles into pathways. What looks like an ending becomes a place of deliverance again. And we're reminded of this. This is hard to really think of, because he never promised to remove every obstacle in our lives. But he does promise to make a way through them. So maybe the question this morning isn't whether or not God will make a way. The question is whether we will trust him enough to take that next step before we see the entire path. Because faith is not first about clarity. Faith is about trusting. And often faith looks like this: stepping forward before the sea parts. And the God who split the sea for the Israelites is still making ways where there seems to be none today. Let's pray. God, we thank you that you are a God who sees everything, who goes ahead of us. That even when we come up against obstacles and situations in our lives that seem impossible, that you are a God who has the power to make a way through it. God, would you remind us that you've never promised to remove those obstacles from our life, but that you remind us that you will see us through it, that you have a plan and a purpose. Would we place our faith and our trust in you today and each day going forward? May this story of Moses and the Israelites and the Red Sea become a promise to us, a reminder to us today of your provision and how you are a healer, a deliverer, a guide, and a waymaker no matter what situation we may face. Amen.